Hello and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
And this week for part two, we are also surrounded by a ton of other people who at least love Harry Potter, if not all books.
Yeah, I know at least some of them have read books other than Harry Potter.
A couple of them.
So yeah, this is going to be part two of the Harry Potter cast extravaganza roundtable review wrap up.
Yep. And I don't remember how rowdy we get, but I think we get fairly rowdy.
Yeah, there's plenty of rowdiness left to be had, even though probably something close to an hour and a half has already passed in the part one. And a similar amount or more remains in part two.
We should have sent this to Audible as an ebook.
Yeah, we should have.
It's 4 hours of Harry Potter talk.
It's almost long enough.
Sell it for 99 cents.
So, anyway, here is part two of the roundtable wrap-up episode.
Enjoy. All right. Want to move into issues, then?
I guess we better.
After, like, 2 hours?
After a solid hour. Oh, boy. Yeah, after close to 2 hours.
Yeah. It's cool.
Oh, I might have to edit this in, like, three parts. This might take longer than 1 week to release.
Portrayal of women in the books.
I think that the portrayal of women in this series is much better than in most fantasy series. And I think that that is because it's written
by
a woman. Yeah. And I think that there's an unfortunate tendency towards, like, Mrs. Weasley is, like, a housewife. And Fleur, even though she's obviously an accomplished witch and beautiful and all this stuff, after they get married and they move into the cottage, what does she do? She does the dishes and she cooks dinner, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, and that's pretty much, like, the end of Fleur's adventures, you know? And I think that Ginny's portrayed in a really positive light, and I think that Mrs. Weasley is portrayed, you know, Hermione, portrayed as strong, competent people who are, you know, just as good as the men around them, you know?
If not better in some cases.
If not better, yeah.
Hermione is the only person I'm thinking of.
McGonagall.
Yeah. McGonagall, or even Bellatrix, who is really competent.
Possibly the most trusted and powerful Death Eater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although it's because she's in love with Voldemort, which...
Well, that's really bad taste on her part.
Questionable.
Or it sounds like Lily was a firecracker back in her day.
Mm-hmm. I would say... Oh, go ahead.
That's the thing. I think that a lot of those... I think that J.K. Rowling could have taken some of that further. I think that she nerfed some of those a little bit just because that would make it more palatable to a wider reading audience, but I think that she could have gotten away with making some of those women play a more central role. Like,
yeah, I think overall the female characters that do play a role are really strong, but I do have some issues, and it mostly comes down to when I look at what's the character list we're going to talk about. Oh, Dumbledore, Snape, Harry, Ron, Neville,
mm-hmm.
Hermione, and Ginny.
Yeah.
And Ginny is almost, like, could be a throwaway, practically. Like, Hermione's the one that has to be on that list.
She almost is in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, when you really look at it, there are so many more significant male characters. And, I mean, the Marauders is four guys, and then Lily's tossed in there.
And even then.
And, like, I mean, Lily's better than all the guys, but it's still 4-1.
James is really the only one who leaves the Marauder group to have, you know, a marriage.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's true.
But, yeah,
Lupin and Sirius are still, you know,
tied up in that shit.
Yeah, still thinking like a boys' club, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I always wondered what the series would be like if Harry Potter were a girl.
Sarah Potter or something.
Yeah, if the main character were a female.
I don't think it, and I think that this is a sad but true fact. I think that if Harry Potter was a girl, I don't think the series ever would have been as successful as it was.
I know, and that makes me really depressed.
I think it would have been equally as good. I just don't think it ever would have gotten the attention that it did.
Yeah.
I think boys of the age that series is aimed at have an unfortunate tendency to pull a, was it Ralph in Lord of the Flies?
And yeah.
That's a girl's book. If a girl's the protagonist.
Well, we were thinking, or I was reading stuff about YA and how it's really interesting that young girls read all YA. So like Harry Potter is like 50% fans, boys and girls. Mm-hmm. Girls will absolutely pick up a book where the protagonist is a man.
Yeah.
Like
my cousins burn through that stuff. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
and
anything.
If you're a little boy, it's not the same way. Like adults don't even hand you books where the protagonist is a girl. Because they're like, oh, he won't want to read that.
My mom did.
Well, that's because your mom's awesome.
Right, yeah.
and you are obviously, like, awesome.
Yeah, there are definitely exceptions. Definitely exceptions to the rule. Like, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, the fact that the publishers made her list her name as JK instead of Joanne mm-hmm. because they were afraid boys wouldn't buy the book if a woman wrote it shows you how sexism is not gone.
It's ingrained.
Like, that yeah. fact alone. And now everyone knows that she's a woman and doesn't care because they like the book so much.
Right.
And, like Twilight, that I hate to bring it up because I hate those books. They're awful. But it's kind of, it's, and those are definitely more, like, romance books, mm-hmm. but it's kind of the same way as the main character's a girl, and it's about a relationship, and so Twilight is girls' books.
Yeah.
Like, most guys wouldn't be caught dead reading a Twilight book.
I wouldn't, until Gabs makes me do one for the podcast.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that podcast. You're gonna be hate podcasting so hard.
I believe that will be the first time I will read along with you guys, because I have not even come close to touching those
yeah,
books.
And
I've read one and a half.
Yeah, they're...
I'm glad you stopped at the half.
And maybe a better example is The Hunger Games, where those actually did eventually take off, and a ton of people have read them. But I have talked to guys who have read The Hunger Games, like, what's Katniss's deal? I'm like...
What do you mean, what's her deal?
She's a 16-year-old girl who's, like, forced to kill dozens of people. Like, what? That's her deal.
I thought you didn't really like Katniss.
I didn't...
A lot of
people... I don't mean to call...
No. I don't think it wasn't necessarily Katniss. I don't think I was a big fan of the books. I just had a hard time getting through them.
Oh,
so.
You're strange.
But, like, some people have issues with, like... Well, maybe they don't like Katniss because she's a girl, or maybe people like those books because Katniss isn't feminine enough, which is a conversation we had, is like, is she too much of a guy, which is a huge debate people have about books all the time, which is stupid, but anyway.
Yeah, something that would probably never have come up in Harry Potter, like, are there times when Harry Potter acts too much like a girl, you know, like, not even...
Yeah, people are never like, Harry's not manly enough in this book.
Yeah.
But if he had been Sarah Potter or Harriet Potter, they would have been like, she's too girly in this book.
But also, Harry's reaction to everything is to get pissed off. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very manly because the only male emotion is rage, as we all know.
Yeah. But he does end up being, like, a lover. Not like... He has sex. Like he loves everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He's a big old ball of love. That's what I keep
saying.
Actually,
in the fifth book, when he's super angsty, I couldn't think of any more male emotion than that, because I remember being that angsty when I was 14 years old.
You just watched a good friend get killed by a Dark Lord. And
exactly.
That's like my life story, man.
Life sucks, man. It sucks. Anyway, women's issues.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything else to say about women in the books? Or women in fiction?
I think Alex really covered it, actually.
I've been thinking about this stuff a lot.
Yeah.
it was kind of obvious, actually.
No, it's good.
I've been trying to think of a fantasy series where women are really well represented, like, evenly with the men, and they don't really exist. I mean, you know, Game of Thrones at least is closer than a lot of them are. Wheel of Time's actually closer than a lot of them are, though there are a lot of unfortunate references to women's cleavage in those books. But at least several of the main characters are badass magic users.
Well, what I think about Game of Thrones is interesting is that I don't think that the female characters get strong until... you've kind of been led into the story by the male characters. Like, they get stronger as the series goes along, and I think it's almost arcing towards having more female characters that have power at the end than it did at the beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, because they kill off all the male characters.
The women tend to survive a little better and start taking over shit, so...
Yeah, overall... And we also talked about in that episode how Sansa, the one girly girl, everybody seems to hate...
Yeah.
But I just feel bad for Sansa.
I know, she just gets shat on the entire
series. I think she's going to be a political force in the end.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's my theory, too.
Yeah, Ben's, like, convinced that Sansa's going to kick some ass.
She's going to be the puppet master by the last book, you know, in 28 years.
Daenerys, Sansa, and Arya are just going to rule Westeros.
That would be amazing.
Fuck all y'all.
Grrr!
Well, he's going to die before he finishes writing the book anyway. Yeah.
By your top.
Okay. So moving on, perhaps.
Sure.
To bullying. Particularly Harry getting bullied by his family, by Draco and Snape, or alternatively Snape getting bullied by James and Sirius.
Yeah, I guess bullying is just kind of a button for me because I hung out with all the nerdy kids in school, and so all my friends were getting shit from dumbasses who were bigger than they were for no reason. And so it just really, it's upsetting to me when it happens, and I think, especially early in the series, it gets glossed over a lot. Like, it's there, but it doesn't seem to have consequences, and it's not really presented as, this is a bad thing that definitely happened. It's more like, oh, this is a part of school and growing up, and so we're just not going to. Like, the teachers don't really step in and ever do anything about it. And some of it is getting to the level of, like, having magical duels in the bathroom. And I mentioned in that episode that Harry should have been more upset by that. But honestly, he got off kind of lightly for almost killing a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, like, cursing each other in the hallway. And it's like, oh, 10 points from Gryffindor.
Right. Right. It's like, that's not appropriate. That's not how you use magic. What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I was talking about how when Harry and Snape are doing their Occlumency lessons and Harry gets a glimpse inside Snape's head to a scene where James and the other Marauders are basically hanging him upside down by his foot and exposing his undergarments in the air.
Just because he's there.
Just because he's there. Like, he doesn't do anything to them.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the moments where, you know, like Ben was talking about at the beginning of this series, bullying is kind of just something that happens in school, whereas this actually seemed like something J.K. Rowling was trying to say, like, hey, look, this is real bullying, and it's really not okay, and, like, Harry, you kind of need to step back and take a look at your dad as, like, the human being he was, as opposed to this person that you've idolized and created in your head.
Yeah, and that moment really does shatter Harry, because he's really pissed that his dad acted like that. So everyone's telling me he's a great guy, and then he does that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And having experienced being bullied himself, he doesn't really appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's been on the receiving end of it just enough to... And I think even in the book, like, something like that happened to him earlier that day where he got, like, singled out for something, so...
Because I think he saw a lot more of, like, in, like, the Snape... Or not Snape, Harry. The Draco and Harry relationship. He saw his dad a lot more as a Draco character than himself, I think.
Yeah.
Just going after people for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Like,
because you can.
Yep.
Well, it's part why I take such issue with Snape being such a bully to students.
He should know better.
He should know better. He's experienced it. He shouldn't put that on other people. Like, you gotta be more adult than that. And especially where he's crossing the line to being totally unprofessional, affecting someone's class standing by doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I kind of understand why... I don't approve of it. I can understand why he bullies Harry because of the James thing. But him bullying Neville, and I mean, he, like, just tortures Neville for no reason at all. That's just unacceptable.
That's where, like, part of Snape's mean-spiritedness that I think is just kind of innate in him comes back into play. Like, he's good to a point, but...
He's not, like, necessarily a good person because he does shit like that.
Or maybe it's a classic case of the bullied... The guy who gets bullied turns into the bully, and that's just how he deals with it.
Right.
There's also, I think, the fact that, you know, you don't learn what Snape's been doing until the very end. And even when he's at school, Dumbledore is leaning on him pretty heavily, you know. Even while he's there, there's still, you know, he's still being bullied, kind of, in a way, because Dumbledore is still...
Right.
Having him do things.
Where he kind of dictates what Snape is allowed to do to a point. What subjects he can teach.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Dumbledore basically dictates what Snape's position at Hogwarts is, and he pretty much has to stick within his own set of parameters there, so
What I think is interesting to think about, too, is if Harry hadn't grown up with the Dursleys and kind of experienced life the way he had up to that point, which Dumbledore chose that path for him, then Harry could have easily been a lot more like his father. And I think because he grew up differently, when he sees his father doing that, he's, like, repulsed by it. But it's also kind of a glimpse at what Harry could have been like if he'd grown up in the wizarding world and had been famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, if someone, like, grew him up pampered and he got to Hogwarts thinking he was hot shit.
That was Dumbledore's point right from the beginning, is that he should be raised as just a regular boy, so...
Yeah.
Good call, Dumbledore.
Well, because people obviously have a lot harder time loving somebody when they're a douchebag.
Yeah.
Draco, for example. Like, if he would have come to school being Draco, it would have been a lot harder for him to have people love him and him love people back enough to sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
It's true. Does that touch on talking about the Dursleys and...
So yeah. With them, it crosses the line a couple of times into what would definitely be considered child abuse. Like, you lock a kid in a room and shove him in, like, a half a cold meal through the cat door twice a day.
Yeah.
Reasonably sure you go to jail for that if you get caught doing
it. Yeah, put bars on his windows.
Yeah.
Need to be called.
Sounds like a breaking news clip at some point in the Muggle news. Like, some kid got found locked in a room given half a sandwich.
Yeah.
I asked Erica about that. For listeners, my girlfriend has 8 years of experience doing social work and child welfare. I said, so what would happen if you saw that at a house? And she said, we'd take the kids and the parents would go to jail.
Nice.
Like, if you went in for a home inspection and there were even bars on the one-bedroom window, and that was the only thing you saw, and none of the other evidence was obvious, and the kid didn't talk about it,
yeah,
you'd still remove the kid from the situation. Like, that's all you need to see.
Yeah.
They don't mess around with that
stuff. Oh, like, that boy looks way less well-fed than the other boy,
yeah.
Are bars on one of the bedroom windows.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Why is there a fat kid and a malnourished kid in this house? That's a little odd. Why is there a sleeping bag in the cupboard underneath the stairs.
Yeah.
I do not understand how the Dursleys can be so cruel to Harry. Like, I don't get it. Like, you have to be kind of evil to treat somebody that way.
Well,
you know?
It's just like their all-abiding hatred of magic transfers onto Harry so strongly that they...
Yeah.
They don't even see him as a human being.
Yeah, I know. It's...
But I just don't, I can't wrap my head around it because I don't know.
It's like, oh, here's this innocent baby. Let's treat him like shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
I think it's more than just hatred, though. I think it's also fear. Like, I think they're afraid that if they let him, like, out, like, if they let him out of the broom cupboard, he's going to, like, obliterate them or something.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. Fear is a huge...
We just try to raise him to be like the ultimate Muggle boy instead of abusing him and making him resent you, especially if you're afraid of him.
Right. Well, but they were trying to beat it out of him.
I guess they were.
Uncle Brian says that at one point. They're like,
squash
we'd just beat the magic out of you, you know? So,
you know, no big.
They're all about the negative reinforcement.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I kind of wonder if you compare it to, like, being afraid that your kid is gay or that your kid wants to do something that you don't want them to do. Like, people have done crazy things because they think that about their children. And it's not, like, what I would do to my children if I thought that, but not that I would do anything to them, but, like...
Yeah. That's actually a fairly good parallel. Like, oh, God, he's gay. Lock him in his room. Don't let him out.
Yeah.
He might go spread the AIDS or something. He might go spread his magic around.
Who have you been showing your magic to?
I don't know, that's a good point. Let's talk about education at Hogwarts.
All right, so I think we have two educational categories. There's the Umbridge Voldemort-style Hogwarts, and then there's the normal Hogwarts. Because one of the things that we were talking about earlier was devising an improved curriculum for Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, I just want to know how, if you were raised in the Muggle community, the Wizarding community, and never go to school before Hogwarts, how do you know how to write an essay? Because they get to Hogwarts and they're like, read these books and write these essays. Like, I'm assuming there's some amount of homeschooling going on, but...
Right, you don't really see very much of that, you know.
I kind of wondered about that. Like, what do wizard kids do before they go to Hogwarts?
Yeah.
There's got to be some sort of like they wizard should... daycare or...
Yeah.
But they don't go to Hogwarts until they're 11. Like, that's...
Yeah. And that's...
What do you do up through fifth grade, essentially?
Well, don't they have to, like, present a magical ability before they get asked into Hogwarts? So, like,
yes.
If they don't... I mean, even if you're born to wizarding parents, couldn't you be a squib and not have magical abilities? So, like, do they just send them all to normal school until they present abilities?
Maybe.
Well, that's what I would think.
You'd think they'd have more awareness of the Muggle world if that was true, though.
Yeah, if everyone had to go to public school for 5 or 6 years. But, I mean, like, with the Weasleys, I feel like they had their babies and just assumed, like, oh, they're magical. I don't think it probably ever crossed their... Well, Mr. Weasley probably wanted to send his kids to Muggle school because he thought it'd be interesting.
He'd be the most excited member of the PTA.
Yeah.
Who's that overzealous man wearing the strange clothes? that's Ronald's father.
Can you imagine if you gave him some of those, like, paper mache streamers? I feel like he would be entertained for years.
Or just giving, like, a basic presentation, projecting something onto
like
a screen.
Like a PowerPoint.
Oh, shit!
Freaking out.
I love Arthur.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like, your mom could teach you how to read, and your mom could teach you even how to write, but, I mean, they have to write papers, and you kind of need a teacher to teach you how to write an essay.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like they should have to take a composition class.
They mention homeschooling a lot in the wizarding community when they're talking about whether people are going to stay at Hogwarts or not, how wizards always have the option to homeschool.
Uh-huh.
Homeschooling comes up a lot in the books if you're actually, like... I mean, not a lot, but I just, like, marathon read a bunch of them, and I saw, you know, come up, like, 3 or 4 times, so.
Yeah.
So, maybe that is the solution. It does seem like Hogwarts does nothing with the basic academic type of curriculum, though.
Yeah, but they all know how to read when they get there, so.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess Mrs. Weasley just taught everyone how to read and write.
Maybe professors cover some of the writing skills along the way, like your 10-inch essay, your first year... gets graded, and maybe they talk about it, and we just don't see those moments because they're so mundane.
Yeah,
yeah,
probably.
I do wonder where they get arithmetic skills from, though.
Arithmancy.
Well, yeah, but what if you don't take arithmancy?
Well, then no math for you.
You have magic. Why do you need math?
Yeah. And wizard money isn't metric. It's
like... It makes no sense. Yes.
Yeah, there's, what, 17 nuts to a sickle? And
I don't even remember.
8
something
sickles
to a galleon.
Every time you have odd numbers.
Well, then it just seems like random, too, because they're like, that's expensive. It costs, like, 10 galleons. But then they're talking about signing up for... apparition classes is 2 galleons a person. I'm like, what's expensive? Is that expensive?
Yeah.
Like, galleons are gold. Like, I have a really hard time. How much does a butterbeer cost?
Maybe
like a sickle?
So maybe it's the fantasy world thing where, you know, like, a gold is a lot, and even one, and silver is not that bad, and a copper is, like, the price of a beer.
Right. Right.
It's what you tip someone who carries your luggage to your room or something.
Yeah.
Oh, here, have a copper. Oh, here, have a sickle. My good man.
I mean, I guess I'm trying to think what they would need to use math for. I mean, potions, maybe a little bit of math. You know, that's more measuring things.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
yeah.
It's just having...
Fractions.
Fractions.
Maybe it's
yeah.
just because I assume math is part of a basic academic grounding.
They're
maybe
not,
it, maybe
I mean,
it's actually not.
I don't know. I don't want to say that, because I agree with you. I think it is.
There's probably, like, a basic, like, working level of math that they use, so...
Oh, they have to be able to add, you know, 1
yeah.
plus 1.
Yeah.
Budgeting for wizards.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
magic.
How to afford a firebolt? 10 easy steps.
But,
magic counting 101.
Accounting. Oh my gosh.
You know, like multiplication.
I assume they have to, like, pay taxes for the Ministry of Magic to afford gold statues in the lobby.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I would hope if you worked at the ministry, you had at least some knowledge of math. Because you have to, yeah, like you said, you have to have a budget for the society to run on, the government.
So a couple of the other, I guess, subject matter related things were that we thought that definitely Muggle studies should be compulsory for all non-Muggle
non-Muggle
students.
So, like, Harry and Hermione should have the choice whether or not they want to take it. But Ron should have to take Muggle Studies.
Exactly.
Yes, he could benefit from that.
And it should be a serious class that people take seriously, because why the fuck don't wizards know more about the Muggle world?
It's disturbing.
Like,
that's, I mean, one of the big things of the whole series is that there's a pretty much, like, stark division down the wizarding community about who believes, even, you know, like, pure-blooded versus, like, half-blooded wizards. Even though the wizarding community has been around for a long time, it seems like they're kind of backwards
with
a lot of stuff. Still, they're still trying to figure out whether wizards are people like everyone else, or species apart, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Right.
They don't get along good with the elves, they don't get along good with the goblins, they barely get along with the centaurs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they have a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And it does, it just seems weird because so many of the people who aren't racist, seem like the Weasleys and stuff, talk about, well, there are way more Muggles than wizards, and if we tried to remain pureblood, wizards wouldn't even exist anymore because we would have just died out. Like, we have to marry Muggles.
And the whole wizarding community, like, a bunch of years ago decided that they were gonna, that it was easier just to hide from Muggles than to try and live alongside them, so.
And when can they reveal themselves again? I think they're a lot less likely to get burned at the stake these days.
Probably.
But I just think it's like, Seamus, I think, mentions that his mom's a witch, but his dad's a Muggle.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as we know, his parents are still married. I don't think he ever, like, really says one way or the other. So, his dad is married to a witch and has a son who's a wizard and knows about magic and is seemingly okay with it, but then he's, like, hiding the magic from everyone else. But then he gets to, like, witness and experience all the magic.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't really get how that works. Because if you're involved in the Muggle community, but you're a relative to someone who's a witch or a wizard, you know all about wizards.
Yeah.
But, like, if you grew up as a Muggle and then join the wizarding community and then marry another wizard, they know jack shit about Muggles.
Right. That's definitely not a two-way street.
Yeah, like, how does that even work? Like, so many of them come from Muggle society.
I have a question, a not entirely related question about wizard dating all of a sudden, though.
Oh.
And that's, how crazy would it be? You're a Muggle, you're dating someone, and, I don't know, things are starting to get pretty serious. Like, 6 months in, they suddenly say, okay, there's something I need to tell you. Pull out a wand and start doing fucking magic.
I'd be like, we're getting married tomorrow.
I know. I don't even care if I don't like you 10 years from now. As long as we have, as long as I get to experience some magic. Let's,
that is amazing.
Let's put a ring on that. Let's go.
This is why,
really crazy.
This is why wizards shouldn't be secretive about them. They'd be rock stars.
Well, considering, like, modern day society loves science fiction and fantasy so much.
Right, now that people would just point at them and go, witch!
They'd be like celebrities.
And start going for the torches.
I don't remember.
Exactly why they don't want to reveal themselves, guys, because it would just turn into, like, a free for all and everybody would be all up in Hogsmeade.
Yeah,
tourist,
that's true.
It would be a tourist trap.
It would turn into Orlando, Florida.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, fuck, go to the sweet shop, chocolate frogs. Ah!
Someone mentions that, like, if they did that, everybody would want a magical fix to all their problems.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I can't remember who says that, but
I think
one,
Mr. Weasley
yeah,
says
someone
that.
Someone says
there's
it. Like,
probably
we can't
something to
because
that.
It would be too big.
Yeah, you would go to wizards and be like, fix this, fix this.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be the hipster wizard who's like, man, Hogsmeade was better before.
Before all the Muggles
showed
up.
We
knew about Hogsmeade before it was cool.
Honestly, I think there's enough douchey Muggles out there that would try to have Horcruxes because they could. It would just kill someone just so they could try to live forever.
Yeah.
But you're a Muggle,
you
can't do
yourself,
that.
Though.
No, I'm just saying, if they would, I'm sure a wizard could do that to a Muggle.
You'd have
or something.
To hire an evil wizard to encase part of your soul.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like, go hire out wizards to do weird shit for you.
Yeah.
It would be a mess. But I do think the fact that, you know, there are only one or two communities left in Britain that are entirely wizard.
Right.
That means, like, 95% of wizards live among the Muggles. So they should know more about them. And they should have to take Muggle studies.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay.
Depends on who teaches Muggle studies.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
As long as not the Carrows.
We're talking about, like, Hogwarts under Dumbledore, where Muggle studies is not evil.
How to torture Muggles.
I hope it's Trelawney. In the near future, you'll encounter a flying vehicle.
Poor Trelawney.
Oh, Trelawney. Politics? That's on our list.
I know. I'm trying to decide if I actually care.
I don't want to talk about politics.
I don't either.
We've
Mystery
talked
Magic
enough
sucks.
About politics. We don't need to break it down for the series.
Okay, let's talk about...
a character I don't like, though, is Fudge. I forgot about him earlier, but
Cornelius
I really started to hate him.
He turns into a... Well, he's always kind of been a twat, but... In book five, he really shows himself to just be a total coward.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think the different ministers at different parts of the series... I mean, I think it works because you've got, like, your peacetime minister trying to make everybody happy, and then when the Dark Lord comes around and they need somebody to actually crack down on stuff, they kick him out of there and get somebody else in, so...
Yeah, that
I
was...
I think Fudge is a good peacetime minister, and then... Voldemort comes back and he kind of goes to pieces because
yeah.
he's got all these people coming
can't
at
handle
him,
it.
Coming at him from different sides, telling him what to do, and he doesn't know how to respond
right.
to
all
it.
All he knows how to do is buy, like, green bowlers and...
Yeah.
A lime green bowler hat.
And be patronizing to Harry.
Yeah. He was not elected to deal with that level of adversity.
What happened to Fudge after Voldemort came back?
We don't really
I don't
know.
Think we ever hear about
he,
him again.
He was advising Scrimgeour for a while. Because
yeah.
he was talking to the Muggle Prime Minister for
right.
him. But then we never find out if he lives or dies.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he gets killed when the Ministry gets taken over.
It seems logical.
But I don't think she ever specifically said
yeah.
whether or not he got killed.
He was transfigured into literal Fudge.
And then someone ate him.
Or they commemorate a Fudge in the sweet shop later in his name.
Yeah. Fred and George create like a Cornelius Fudge.
Oh, that's great.
There will probably be some wartime references in that shop afterwards.
And Weasley's Wizard Wheezes.
Fred would be disappointed in George if he was in if he wasn't somewhat irreverent about it eventually.
Yeah.
He'd be like, you better make people feel awkward about having a dead twin sometime. Fred would be into that.
Yeah.
Well, like, George could be standing in a circle and be saying something about how he, ever since the war, feels like he's been missing part of himself, and everyone's like, oh shit, Fred's gone. And he's like, I mean, my ear just...
Yeah.
Tough loss.
Totally.
Yeah. They're like, dude! Loss.
I've never been the same since the war. Why? I missed my fucking ear.
Why?
Like,
come
George!
On. Damn it, George! He just
trolls everybody.
He's like, I named my kid Fred. Calm down.
I think the Weasley...
I married my brother's ex-girlfriend,
so it's cool.
I think the Weasley family would get behind that eventually.
I don't know.
I think they'd understand where he was coming from, at least.
I think they would learn to live with it after
yeah.
enough times.
Poor George.
I know. He lost his best friend and his brother.
Maybe he shouldn't have been a twin. I mean, just saying.
Maybe he should have thought about that before he was born.
That's actually... We were talking about...
That's actually a great point.
We were talking about most devastating deaths earlier. I'm not trying to bring us down.
Yeah.
But that was
too much laughter in this conversation.
Yeah. That was actually the most devastating death to me the first time.
Fred.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was so quick.
It's definitely the Weasley family, and particularly for George, is definitely, like, killing someone's twin.
Yeah.
That's messed up.
Yeah.
Because she could have killed off pretty much any of the other Weasleys, and you would have been sad, but, like,
yeah.
well...
Well, if it had been Percy, you barely would have felt anything.
Yeah, whatever.
If it had been Bill, you would have felt real bad.
Yeah.
But because it was one of the twins, it's like that extra little bit of gut punch.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a horrible person, again. But
you should stop prefacing everything with that.
So when Fred died, I literally laughed out.
No, I didn't laugh, but I read most of the book as them, like, being double of the same person. They weren't individual enough for me to
mm-hmm.
to care about them as individual people. I saw them as, like, a entity. And even though one was gone, I was like, okay, there's still the other one. Like, that was my reaction. Maybe that's bad, but...
There's a spare Weasley twin.
Exactly, that's how I saw it.
Well, at least we have a spare.
Yeah.
I do think that J.K. Rowling could have gone farther to delineate the twins. Like, maybe Fred somehow gets put into detention when George doesn't, and Harry hangs out with George for an afternoon without Fred or something.
Right.
Like, something like that could have happened.
Yeah.
Because unless you're really looking for it, it is hard to tell the twins apart.
Yeah.
If you read their dialogue with a sharp eye, you do notice, like, Fred is more likely to tell the punchline than George and a little more likely to mm-hmm. be a little meaner than George. But, I mean, I don't think we ever see one without the other, so.
Yeah. What's going to happen
to
the...
No, I actually thought that death was really, like, sad the first time that I read it, but I had two twins. I had a set of twins in my high school where one died in high school, and, like, Max was really affected when Alex died, and they were actually not similar at all. Like, Alex was really popular and Max wasn't, and then when Alex died, Max, like, became more popular because people were upset for him and that kind of thing. But it was really weird to, like, read that in Harry Potter and kind of have that happen in high school too.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's yikes.
Yeah, and well, I mean, and one thing about the twins not being all that differentiated is that twins usually do try to kind of separate certain things about themselves from each other just so they don't get lumped in as that one, like...
The same person!
That person unit that is two people.
That one two-headed person.
Yeah. Whereas Fred and George seem to kind of revel in that.
Yeah.
I do wonder what will happen to the Weasley Wizard Dean Weasley's brain trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron takes time off after Hogwarts and helps George run it.
Yeah.
That was the rumor that I heard.
I see. Yeah. I see. To say George would need a partner to bounce ideas off of, I would think.
Yeah.
Maybe the wife.
Maybe Lee.
Lee would be perfect. So maybe the wife steps partly into that role.
Angelina is like, all right. Here's what's gonna happen.
Hey, here's Alex.
I'm just wondering how awkward that bedroom is at night.
They're both lying in bed like, Fred.
It's not very sexy.
That's awkward.
Gabs and I were comparing them to the twins from Oron Host Club.
High school.
Oh,
no!
Redheaded mischievous troublemakers.
I mean, it's very so. Well,
if someone had ever made a joke about twincest to Fred and George, they would have run with it.
They would have been the first ones to make everyone feel uncomfortable with it.
They'd have been like, "Oh yeah, we're hot for each other." I'm like, "No." And then they would have cracked up because that's how they were.
They would have ran off giggling.
Which would do nothing.
Damn you, Weasley twins!
Which would do nothing to dispel the rumors.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about some of the things that happen in the earlier books that pop up again in the later books that you might have thought were unimportant. Just because when you really think about it, the entire series, starting from book one, ties together, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling's actually an author that thinks about what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, there are interviews with her, and she's like, she pretty much had an idea where the whole series was going, and so she had, like, an overarching outline for the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's a lot of it was more stuff like, oh, I introduced this in the first series, let's play with that some more. Mm-hmm. And so she had kind of like this skeleton that she was working with the whole time, and then kind of like threw details onto it.
Yeah.
A lot of the details that come up again later, though, it seems like she paid closer attention to her continuity than a lot of series authors do. Like, and that's hard to do. There's so much stuff to keep track of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that I always really liked is a lot of people have historically, I don't know if you really say that about Harry Potter, but have disliked book two because a lot of people I talked to always thought it was kind of pointless.
Uh-huh.
But if you really think about it, book two almost contains more important plot points later on than any of the other ones. So the opening of the Chamber of Secrets with the diary, which later is proven to be a Horcrux, which Harry destroys the Basilisk Fang, which is one of the only ways you can destroy Horcruxes.
Which is how Ron destroys the cup.
Hermione destroys the cup. He pulls the Gryffindor sword out of the hat, which later becomes also one of the only ways you can destroy Horcruxes. And Neville later pulls the sword out of the hat. Dobby shows up in book two, shows you the beginning of the house elf rites thing that's going on. The power of house elves in general, and then also just Dobby's importance in the series as a whole.
Mm-hmm. and he comes back in the seventh book and saves everybody's butts.
Yep. And Harry being able to speak Parseltongue pops up in book one, but becomes more of a thing in book two, and that's really the first rumblings of Voldemort maybe have transferred some of his power over to Harry when he attacked him.
Book two.
Yeah.
I've always liked book two.
I'm
going to be that hipster. I like book two.
I liked book two before we found out about Horcruxes.
I still have a hard time getting through that book, even though I know all that extra information now. So, yeah.
Well, you just have the wrong opinions about it.
That's why you're here.
I just wanted to point that out. But book one, we have some other things. We have, of course, the important thing in book one that Ben and I forgot to even mention in the book one podcast.
You guys are dumb. The invisibility cloak!
Yeah, the invisibility cloak, which ends up being, like, a key component of the entire series. So good job, us. Which... I like how the invisibility cloak is not only just, like, used multiple times throughout, but in book seven, it's like, oh, there's actually a Deathly Hallow, which is how you can help defeat Voldemort.
Right, it's not an invisibility cloak, it's the invisibility cloak.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah, I loved the scene at Xenophilius Lovegood's where he's like, have you ever seen an invisibility cloak you can use again and again and never gets damaged or fades or anything? And they were like... yeah, I have one.
I've been carrying that.
They're like,
oh shit!
You mean that's not normal?
Oh shit! And then the point Maria brought up about Harry in book one and his trip to the zoo. I'll let you talk about that one since you're the one who remembered it.
Yeah, he, like, talks to the snake and lets it out of the zoo display. And I think Gabs, you were the one that said that that snake is actually Nagiri.
Yeah,
later on.
Nagini.
I'm not
or
sure, but...
Nagini, or however you pronounce...
Yeah.
...that name.
It's Voldemort's freaking snake.
Yeah, Harry lets Voldemort's snake out of the zoo at the beginning of book one.
It was an accident.
It was.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That kind of blows my mind.
J.K. Rowling actually said that snake is Nagini.
Oh.
That's
why doesn't,
pretty effed up.
Why doesn't that snake remember him at all then? Like,
yeah, I know. Why isn't it like, hey, what's
and,
up, bro?
And why does it never refer to him as amigo again?
Yeah.
Because the first five chapters of book one are like lol kids book.
That's,
yeah.
Look, this snake is from South America. I keep saying Dias Mio.
Later on, like, it's not supposed to really be the snake,
right?
The snake's personality anymore.
And the snake is also a Horcrux, so
the snake has been a Horcrux since he tried to kill Harry, though. That's like,
yeah, that
because he goes to Godric's Hollow.
Yeah, Harry was the last Horcrux,
yeah.
So,
Nagini was the last Horcrux.
Yeah, he makes Nagini into a Horcrux as sort of like an emergency measure.
Right.
Harry's an accidental Horcrux.
Yeah.
Harry
right.
was an accident. But
well, that's what I'm saying. Harry was the last Horcrux, but he wasn't planned to be a Horcrux.
Right,
yeah,
but that's...
Neither was Nagini.
Chronologically.
But yeah. Nagini didn't ever go like, oh, hey, you rescued me from the zoo, because she was... a Horcrux and possessed by Voldemort, is my guess.
Right.
He's all
why
full of Voldemort.
Why didn't the Horcrux-possessed snake do anything when Harry let it out of the zoo?
Oh, because it wasn't a Horcrux yet.
He had to let it out of the zoo. Well, but that doesn't make sense.
I don't think Nagini was a Horcrux until book four.
Until later. Oh, okay. No. Until later.
I think Dumbledore says, like in book four, he goes, shit, I need another Horcrux. Nagini.
Okay. Yeah, it had to have to be after that.
Yeah, because otherwise it would be like...
Maybe it was a baby snake.
I think when he became like a, I don't know what Voldemort became after he tried to kill Harry, but wisp of himself,
yeah.
a wraith. No, he was possessing like snakes and other little creatures in the woods.
Uh huh.
That wasn't Nagini.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Does anybody know when the Elder Wand first appeared? Because wasn't it like Dumbledore's? Was it just the wand that Dumbledore was using all the way along?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
it was.
I think so. don't know if they ever mentioned that being particularly powerful or anything ahead of time.
No, because Dumbledore was just supposed to be a powerful wizard.
Right, mm-hmm. And just
so
keeping it secret.
Everybody was all like, oh, Dumbledore, you know, he's the most powerful wizard of the age, so if he's carrying around a super powerful wand, nobody even noticed.
Like, yeah,
right.
Because he was already awesome.
Yeah. Doesn't the little street lamp light sucker thing become important
yeah.
later, too?
The Deluminator.
Yep.
Illuminate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deluminate.
It shows
that's
up in...
That's like the first chapter of the first book,
yeah.
isn't
yep.
it?
Book one, book... Moody uses it like once in book five, and then Ron gets it in book seven.
Where it turns out to have secret powers.
Yeah, secret powers.
Dumbledore!
Dumbledore? I know, I always thought the connection was a little tenuous. I was like, really? Okay. Well, whatever.
The Deluminator turns Ron into a human Porky.
Yeah.
We didn't
there
sign
we go.
Yeah. You can make humans into a Porky. And then I was... Oh, go ahead.
What book does Harry catch the snitch in his mouth that then Dumbledore puts the thing in later?
Book one.
Yeah, book one, yeah.
Yep. Because his first Quidditch match is in book one. Good point, also.
Damn.
Maria's full of these. I was also going to mention in book four, Voldemort taking Harry's blood specifically. Dumbledore mentions in book seven that connection is part of the reason why Harry's able to survive the killing curse again and defeat Voldemort in the end.
Voldemort, you idiot.
You dumb, stupid idiot.
Yeah, he needs a little more forethought before he does.
Oh, and I guess book three, Dumbledore mentioning that Wormtail owes Harry...
It did finally come back.
Came back in book seven when he decided to stop strangling him for like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a mistake.
Yeah, and then his hand killed himself, but...
Well, when Voldemort gives you a magic hand, you should probably
consider
not disobeying Voldemort while you're wearing the magical hand he
gave
you. It seems almost like the hand spared Harry and then killed Pettigrew all on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like when he let him go, it was like an involuntary little thing.
He was like, oh shit, what have I done?
Oh shit, and then the hand was like, wow, what have you done?
Yeah. So, any other things like that we want to bring up? I guess McGonagall turning into a cat in book one. Is an example of an animagus that shows up later.
She doesn't use that power very often, does
but
she?
But other people do.
True.
I don't know. That's more of just like a general magic thing.
Getting into Potter trivia here
yeah.
now. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm going to ask some questions now. Round table.
Yay.
Woo. Okay, so this is a question courtesy of Scott.
This is a good question.
So would you drink the polyjuice potion to turn into your significant other and have them drink the polyjuice potion to turn into you and then have sex with each other? Yes or no?
I was thinking about that during, like, book 6 or 7 when they were taking polyjuice potion. Like, taking polyjuice potion and turning into a woman. I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would have to do it once. Yeah.
I would definitely do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Without hesitation, yes.
Yeah. I think I would be more likely to do something like that with stranger than was something I knew. Someone because what if it turned out to be really awkward and terrible?
Like, well, probably. I was saying, like, if I took a polyjuice potion to turn into a guy, the first time I tried to have sex, I'd be like, "How do I work this thing?" Because I don't have the years of experience. Like,
I had no experience with
figuring it out. Yeah. I'm just like, it's out of control.
All more reason to do it. The experience.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it helped you get better at it with each other.
Yeah,
there you go.
Oh, that's why this takes so long.
Couples therapy with polyjuice potion.
I
want to know, like, would you make the same noises that you would, like... or would you know to, like, switch up the noises?
I bet there are all sorts of wizard swinger society.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
Crazy stuff like that.
So if you're generally the person who's, like... I guess you say Merlin if you're a wizard. You're like the really vocal one, and then you change into your partner if, like, all of a sudden your partner's the vocal one, and they're like, what's going on?
And you get caught off guard, like, oh, damn, that's intense.
I have a feeling I would get really jealous at some point.
While making love to yourself?
Yes, I would be like,
would you actually...
this feels way better on this end than it does on the other end.
You want to start using it regularly.
I don't even have to work as hard. This is bullshit.
That's just my thought.
Good question, Scott.
We already talked about Neville being the chosen one. What Hogwarts house do you think you would be in, and would it be different than your favorite Hogwarts house?
I think that I am probably not studious enough to be a Ravenclaw, despite being a reasonably bright person. Though Gav might argue with that.
I think you're reasonably
bright. I'm definitely not that courageous. I think I'd be lean more Hufflepuff or Slytherin, probably.
And if we're taking Slytherin to be like the non-dick versions of Slytherins.
I could be a Slughorn.
Yeah, like a Slughorn. As opposed to a Draco.
Yeah. I don't think that's out of the question. I'd probably lean slightly more that way, I think. I'd be like a Slytherpuff or something.
What's your favorite Hogwarts house? Do you
have one? You know, I think I've been talked into the Hufflepuffs over the course of this series.
They grow on you.
Hooray for Hufflepuffs.
Jessica?
I'm definitely a Ravenclaw. It's weird because I took one of the quizzes on Pottermore and I got Ravenclaw. Not because I was trying to, but the little introduction that they have for getting into your house, I actually got really annoyed because it sounds like all the other Ravenclaws are just really arrogant and annoying and always talking about how smart they are. So I feel like I would be a Ravenclaw, but I would hang out with, like, not Ravenclaws.
You'd be like hanging out with Luna.
Right, I hang out with Luna, but... Yeah, so I think Ravenclaw, maybe a little bit Slytherin. I can be kind of mean and self-serving sometimes. So maybe a little bit. My favorite house is Hufflepuff. I really like him.
My favorite house is Ravenclaw, but I feel like I'm probably not studious enough to get in either, so I probably would have been hanging out down in the kitchens by Hufflepuff.
I always wanted to be a Gryffindor when I was growing up. But then I think when I got older, I realized I am a Hufflepuff through and through.
So I really did want to be a Gryffindor.
Really bad.
But I like my comfort and my warm spaces and happiness, I guess.
Your close group of friends.
Exactly. So, Hufflepuff.
Is that your favorite house, too?
It's becoming... I'm identifying myself more as a Hufflepuff, and so I can appreciate it more now.
I always said I would be a Slytherin, but... I am extremely studious and academically minded. Not like in a I'm smart way, but just like in a I'm that person who like studies because I want to.
Yeah, she'd be the person who I can't have fun for another hour. I have to finish this essay.
Yeah, and everyone I did that to people in college and they were like, "God, like come to this party." I was like, "I'm researching a paper." I'm reading Shakespeare.
What up?
Okay.
I'm like that now, but I never was in school.
Yeah. So I feel like that's a Ravenclaw tendency, but I also do feel like I am kind of a Slytherin asshole. So I don't know. I'd probably fit more with Ravenclaw, but...
We could be the non-dick Slytherins, Gav.
I feel like I have Slytherin tendencies. But I like Hufflepuff.
We all like Hufflepuff. You said Ravenclaw was your favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maria?
I'm smart enough to be in Ravenclaw, but I'd probably be in Hufflepuff.
I don't know. I'm trying to take the quiz right now to find out. I feel like I could be maybe like a Ravenclaw or a Gryffindor. I'm not sure. I'm a nerd, so I could maybe fit in a Ravenclaw, but I'm not sure I could answer those like riddles to get into the door of the classroom. I'd be like out there like... Somebody help me.
That's how you learn.
What the hell am I supposed to say?
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's hard. I don't think I'm a Slytherin because I'm like really willing to like help, like over, like I'm overly willing to like help people. Like I'm like, oh, do you need help? Like I'll come help you. I don't know. I don't know if I'm brave, though. I feel like I would just, like if someone tried to punch me, I would just be like, please don't. Like, no. I don't know.
So so maybe Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Maybe Hufflepuff. I might be a Hufflepuff after all.
Maybe that's the deciding question. What would you do if someone tried to punch you? Because I would duck.
I'd cower and say, I'm so sorry. I'll try to fix whatever I did to you.
I was going to say, I would duck it and then subtly undermine them for the rest of the school year.
Slither in. I'd send poisonous snakes into their bed.
I would get punched and then go on my merry. Yeah.
Gryffindor's the one who punched back, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a favorite book of the series? In general,
yeah, Ender's
Game. Do you have a favorite book?
I hate all books.
My love affair with books is coming to a close. I won't love them until they acknowledge that they love me.
Oh, Lord.
No one else is saying anything. I feel the need to
be
me.
Figure out your favorite Harry Potter book.
All right. My favorite book is The Half-Blood Prince.
That's the direction I'm leaning in.
Uh-huh.
Just because it's the most tightly plotted, but it has all the good, more adult elements in it at the same time.
I think that's where you get to learn a lot of the really good background on everyone except Dumbledore. Like,
uh-huh.
I mean, that's where you learn a lot about what the other side is doing. And I think it's weird that Voldemort pretty much doesn't do anything that year, because suddenly there's all this exposition that J.K. Rowling has to set up to get ready for Book 7, basically.
Yeah.
It's true that Voldemort actually doesn't... He shows up in Book 6 in the form of memories,
yeah.
But he doesn't appear in person in the present in Book 6.
Yeah, it's true.
Which
I mean,
is
no
weird.
No idea what he's doing for that year.
Yeah. He's just running around trying to...
Taking a sabbatical.
Yeah.
Take over shit.
Yeah.
Basically. Well, he's trying to get Dumbledore out of the way so he can really step up to the forefront, I think. But, mm-hmm. Yeah. I tend to lean Book 6 as well, because after 4 and 5 are fun... But then after 4 and 5, an editor finally was like, hey,
yeah,
like, cool your jets and let's fix this.
Yeah.
And so it's more tightly edited than 4 and 5 and 7 and fits together. And I always loved the memory stuff in that book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The backstory is pretty great. I mean, but for funsies, I always liked 4 growing up until I read 6 and 7. Because I really do like... all the stuff tying together and learning all this background, but 4's always been kind of a fun one for me.
I liked 4 a lot, too, actually. See, this is why we're getting married. I really, really liked 4 up until I read Book 6, I think. And then I really, really liked that one. So, 6 was my favorite.
I do love the Department of Mysteries fight scene, though.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I like 4 and 5. I really like all the other stuff, like learning the backstory and stuff, but like I like The Hobbit more than I like Lord of the Rings. Like, I just like fun stories, I think, sometimes. So I think that's why I like those. And also my quiz results came back and I'm a Hufflepuff.
Oh, awesome.
Called it. We already talked about all that. Shoot. There's Ben's question of who is the biggest dick in the series and who has the biggest dick. I think we also said that Hagrid has the biggest dick.
Are we
okay,
for sure?
We have not talked about Hagrid, at all.
Could be Grop.
By the way.
Could be Dumbledore. He's probably the best at engorgement charm.
Oh, God. Ew. That'd be the real disaster of wizards and muggles interacting, would be that all the men would be like, make my penis bigger!
The wizard would be like,
constantly.
Stop asking me to make your penis bigger.
Late night infomercials everywhere for wizards.
Wizards would set up shops to enchant stuff for people. You're right there on the front side. No penis enlargements.
No penis enlargements. Absolutely not.
Actually, something I thought of earlier that I wanted to bring up was it's interesting to me that Harry, the first couple of books up until book 4, Harry goes through life being told that he must be really powerful because when Voldemort tried to kill him, it didn't work and Voldemort got destroyed. But then he finds out that it's really his mother's love and it has nothing to do with his own magical abilities. which I think is really interesting, like, for him to find that out about himself, and also for, like, the perception that everybody has about Harry being a powerful wizard. Like, I don't know that he's actually that, like, powerful. And they do like say later that he's good at defense against the dark arts, but I almost think that's out of necessity of like running into Voldemort every year since he was like 13.
Well, yeah, but that kind of makes him a powerful wizard. And they say like Dumbledore is really quick, like right away, not to downplay the fact that Harry actually had to like fight wizards that were more powerful uh-huh. than him and stuff like that. So he gets a lot of his power from somewhere else, but he's obviously got some skill and some power because he managed to keep himself alive.
He was more competent than I remembered.
Yeah.
Doing spells, especially in the last book.
He comes across a lot earlier, I think, just kind of as a kid running around getting lucky.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, he really does... He's kind of forced to develop those skills because of his circumstances, but then he rises to the occasion. So... But, I mean, Dumbledore basically says, like, the powers you have that Voldemort knows not is just your capacity to care about people, which he says again and again is the most powerful magic.
Right, yeah.
Which everyone looks at him and is like, what are you talking about?
Everyone thinks he's a nut.
Yeah, but it does end up being true.
So I'm remembering the climax of a different series that had a very similar theme, and I won't tell anyone what it is because I don't want to accidentally spoil yet another series. But it basically involved the protagonist dropping all of like their badass magical sort of abilities, putting her feelings into her fist and punching out the bad guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a fantasy series that had it. Girl is the protagonist, but I guess I can't tell you what it is now because I just told you how it ends.
Thanks, Ben.
So if we ever reach the climax of the series that's like that, then
you'll know what I'm talking about.
We'll solve the mystery.
It's not that big of a spoiler. I'll tell you what it is off the air.
Okay.
The other thing I think that Maria mentioned is some people draw religious parallels to the fact of sacrifice and dying and coming back and all of that. And so what do we think about Harry being a possible Jesus or Dumbledore being a possible Jesus or godlike character?
I mean, you can draw that parallel, but I don't think that J.K. Rowling was like, oh, I'm going to write a story about Jesus.
Well, I don't think she did that. But, like, after book 7, a lot of people were like, oh, Harry was Jesus.
It was like a savior trope, kind of, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the common experience that most people can relate back to a story like that. So
I mean, I agree. I actually think that's usually the one where you... That's usually the sort of comparison where you dig a layer deeper into the story and go, oh, okay, so that... There probably was some of that going on, but with this story, I actually think that's the surface interpretation. It's like, oh, he died, and then he came back, so he must be Jesus.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but, like, there's not the sin aspect unless you think Voldemort is a symbol for wizarding sins, which I guess, depending on your opinion of wizard racism, is not entirely insane. But
yeah.
But I think it's going too far, personally. So, I think it's not... I don't think it's an indefensible point. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah, Jesus isn't the only good versus evil story out there.
Yeah.
True.
No, I kind of agree. I just have heard people, like, bring it up about, oh, you know, it's actually my mother who was like, Dumbledore is God, and what she said was, Dumbledore is God, and Voldemort is the devil, and this all just reminds me of Star Wars.
Well, Star Wars I definitely see.
That's really funny.
Like, Dumbledore could be Obi-Wan. And
Harry's Luke.
He's kind of turning Luke into a weapon to fling at the Emperor, who is Voldemort. And Luke's power of love causes him to turn Vader, even though he thought he was irredeemably evil.
Yep. But who's Harry Potter Vader?
I don't know. There isn't really one.
Damn it!
Like, it's not quite the perfect parallel, but they have a lot of elements in common. But
yeah.
That particular story arc, I mean, is kind of a powerful one. Like, there's a just like the good versus evil, or the Lensman, for that matter, that I mentioned earlier, where we had the evil race and the good race, who are both so far above humanity, we basically can't comprehend them.
Yeah.
Yet it took humanity getting this power and being honed into a weapon by the good race to be able to defeat the bad ones, because they were a perfectly even match without whatever that human element is.
Yeah.
That happens in Babylon 5, too.
Yeah, it does.
And can I just say, like, not to put Harry Potter down at all, because obviously we've been talking about it for, like, 4 hours. I love it. But, love being, like, the distinguishing factor is such a common... I mean, Ben and I have talked about it in YA books in general, like, when we read A Wrinkle in Time. But also, whenever you read a sci-fi book where aliens look down on humans because they're warlike or savage or whatever, if aliens ever learn to appreciate humans, it's always because it's our ability to love.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They're like, oh, they're warlike, but they have such love inside of them. That's, like, what always saves the human race in the end, is the fact that we can love each other.
Right. Well, it's one of the TV tropes. One of their tropes is, tropes are not bad. So, like, you can recycle the same thing's been done 1,000 times, and if you do a killer job of it, it's still a great story.
Yeah.
Well, what is the Greek religion where they believe that there's good and evil, and those are the two forces that are fighting against each other constantly, and that you're either one or the other?
Zoroastrianism. Yeah, I was like, how do you pronounce that shit?
Zoroastrianism. Involves a lot of masks and swordplay.
Yeah, that's like the light versus the dark.
Yeah, because he fights for good, but he wears all black.
It's Zoroastrian, like you guys are, I think you're saying it right. Chris actually knew, he heard me ask the question.
Now who's a nerd, Chris?
Yeah, suck it. Or don't. That's just a talk to
him. He says he's just college educated, not a nerd.
Okay. Well, I think my final point on the outline was talking about the movies. I don't know if that's at this point in time we have enough energy to talk about the movies, but I'll go ahead and throw it out there as a possibility.
The one thing I did find myself almost bringing up the entire conversation, but not really finding the right moment, was just how my vision of Harry from the books is actually so different from the Harry in the movies. And a lot of the time, I think, because I've seen the movies so many times now and watched the books, read the books so many times that, like, it gets confused in my head sometimes. And so when I'm thinking about how I get really annoyed with Harry, a lot of the time it's actually just, like, Daniel Radcliffe's portrayal of Harry in the movies. Because I feel like he's a lot less intelligent in the movies. I feel like he comes across as a lot less perceptive in the movies. And, I mean, poor Daniel Radcliffe, like, I love him as a human being. I think he tries really hard. I think he had several very terrible directors, and, you know, it's not all his fault.
He was just a kid.
Right. Yeah. He was just a kid. Like, of course he can't, you know, be what you want
to
be.
I'm going to interject for just a second, because I haven't seen any of the movies, and so I'd like to ask just quickly what each of you who actually have watched some or all of them, like, your general impression is of them. Like, are they more good, more bad, truer to the books, or, like, fatally flawed?
I think as compared to the books, they have to cut out all of the charm of the books. So I don't necessarily think they're horrible movies, but I think that they lose, for me, they lose everything that makes the book so appealing. Because, like, all of the quirky fun stuff seems to completely disappear and just focus on the story. So like I was telling Ben, the battle at Hogwarts at the end, they get rid of the stampeding desks and the throwing the crystal balls and the fighting with herbology, and instead they're like, let's just point wands at each other and yell spells. Yeah.
And they make up spells. They're like not even real spells in the movie that they use all the time.
Real spells?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a book nerd. The book is the authority.
Book so nerds that, and book snobs in
that,
this room.
That was my main problem with the movies, is I think they don't have the magic of the books.
Yeah, and they undersold. I know you've also, in the past, made the point that you thought they undersold Ron specifically.
Yeah. They
he is,
do a horrible job with Ron's character.
He's essentially comedic relief throughout all seven movies.
Mm-hmm. Like, and Harry and Hermione are best friends, and Ron's a bumbling idiot. And it seriously makes no sense whatsoever why he and Hermione get together. And, like, I don't know, that was a big complaint, because when you read the books, you're like, yeah, Harry and Ron are best friends, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch the movies, you're like, why do they even hang out with that guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, all of my problems with the movies come from the fact that I read the books first, and so I built the whole world and how I thought the people looked, and then I see the movies, and it, like, obliterates all of that. And, like, now I can't even remember. This happens to me anytime I do this, like, Game of Thrones, I read all of those and had a whole world built, and then I haven't even seen, like, the TV series, I just saw pictures of, like, the actors that they picked out, and now that's all I can see when I, like, think of that character. But you do lose, like, the level of detail, and you lose a lot of the backstories and a lot of the things that make it interesting, so, like, it always baffles me that people who love the movies will refuse to read the books, because I'm like, really? Like, this is, like, a surface.
If you like the movies.
Like, a surface pass.
It makes way more sense in the other direction, because that's essentially what I've done. I mean, I have no interest in seeing the movies, because I do have a world built up in my head, and I have all the detail, and, well, I'm a giant book snob, and I usually think the movies are worse than the books, even when they do a really, really good job.
Yeah.
Though sometimes I'm a little curious, you know, just to throw out, since Ender's Game is going to be out this fall, and I love that book, like, whatever vision of it they show me, if it doesn't match what's in my head, it's not going to destroy it for me. I'm just going to go, okay, you're just wrong. Like, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
It's not what I was expecting.
I just think no movie is ever going to be able to capture what I can conjure in my own head based on J.K. Rowling's descriptions and writing.
I get it. Conjure.
Uh-huh. One problem I also always had with the movies is the books feel very, like, especially fight scenes and stuff feel really organic, and that people are, like, bouncing off of each other and coming to decisions and running around, and there's chaos. And in the movies, it always felt very staged. Like, okay, in this scene, Bellatrix has to try and kill Ginny, and then Mrs. Weasley has to say, "Not my daughter, you bitch," and then they fight. But it's like Bellatrix shoots the curse at Ginny, and there's a pause, and then Mrs. Weasley steps forward and very, like, slowly and deliberately is like, "Not my daughter, you bitch." Yeah. And then they start fighting, and I'm like, in the book, it's like she jumps in front of the curse, screams at her because she's so pissed, and then they're, like, running off into the chaos.
Uh-huh.
Well,
and the movies never descended into chaos.
Sort of the advantage of reading it is that you get to interpret it your own way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like, in your head, you get to pace it at your pace when you read that scene, as opposed to when you're watching a movie, you're watching one person's interpretation of the book instead of reading it and adding your own interpretation to the book. And I'm in the same camp. Like, I was really, I told my mom that we were going to be, my mom's a huge Harry Potter fan, that we were going to be doing a big roundtable discussion, and she immediately started watching all the movies. And I was like, "Mom, what are you doing?" We're talking about the books. And so I had to, like, take myself into another room and read the books and be like, "No, I don't want to see any of the movies' interpretations of how this story is supposed to go. I just want to read the books." So
one thing I have been meaning to bring up that we forgot to put on our list was, you know, in the neighborhood of visual depictions, all the little chapter illustrations.
Oh, yeah.
That appear in, I guess, the American version. I don't know if those are in the English one.
I don't know either.
It's a different illustrator for the British versions than it is. It's Mary Grand Prix for the American versions.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they're redoing all of the covers with a new artist. And
yeah,
Japanese
I saw that.
Now, so you should check those out, actually.
I guess. I'd be interested.
The new covers are really cool.
They are cool. They're cool. But they're very different from Mary Grand Prix style, which is very rounded and, like, kind of hazy. And I mean, it's very magical feeling.
Right, yeah. But I was going to see kind of what the general opinion of that, of those illustrations, what your opinion is on those. And whether your image of what, say, people look like or creatures look like have anything to do with those illustrations, or if it's like, oh, there's a funny little illustration.
When I read the first book, anytime I saw a character at a chapter heading, I was like, that's how I'm going to picture the character for the rest of this book. I'm not going to think about the movie at all. Just its illustrations.
Actually, the one character I remember the most would probably be Moody. There's a picture of him at the beginning of one of the chapters, mm-hmm. where it's just like his profile. Like, he's kind of like turned like three quarters. You can kind of see like his face. And that was the image of Moody in my head for the longest time. And I remember when I specifically saw the fourth movie, it completely ruined it for me. Because I had such an awesome, epic Moody that I had in my brain. And then I couldn't reconcile the two of them in my head. And now it's...
The same happened with me in Slughorn. The illustration of him in the book. He's got, like, the walrus mustache.
Yeah.
That's great. I just thought the actor... I mean, I love Jim Broadbent, but he looks nothing like Slughorn.
No, they didn't even try.
They did not. They're like, fat guy with a giant walrus mustache who's bald. And they're like, skinny, tall British guy with hair and no facial hair. I was like...
But he acted the role really well.
Yeah.
Where was Wilford Brimley when you needed
him? I thought Slughorn... is Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, totally.
In my head.
He would not have been able to detect.
No, I mean, he would have been horrible, but he looks like
it. He does.
So the chapter illustration that stood out to me was the one of Snape looking angry with flames in the background.
Oh, like at the end of
the
six?
End of the sixth book, yeah. That one's kind of burned into my mind's eye.
I know which one you're talking
about. Plus it's Snape with, you know, like a goatee and...
Yeah.
And
looking all evil.
Yeah, and he's also the thing you just need to remember, especially if you're thinking of movie Snape, is that Snape should be like
30s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something I always thought was funny is
he didn't have a goatee in any of the movies.
No.
Yeah, is Snape and Lupin and Sirius are all supposed to be in their 30s. Because Harry's 13 when he first meets them, and his parents died when they were like 20. So they're like 33, 34. And Gary Oldman is not 33.
No.
And Alan Rickman is not 33.
No.
And the guy who plays Lupin, I don't remember his name, he's like in his 40s. And it's fine when you're watching the movie, but then if you think about it logically, you're like, wait a minute.
They're also young.
Yeah, they're young people.
Don't think about it logically.
I do have to say, though, I liked the way that Snape in the movies delivers lines, and also Lucius Malfoy. I thought that the actors, like, the way that they deliver lines was better than what I had imagined.
I like Alan Rickman. So I was mostly okay with him, even though he wasn't young enough.
Right.
They do make Snape a little goofier in the movies than I would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple comedic scenes with him where I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
WTF Snape?
Like, in the one movie where he's like, you know, turn to page 624, and, like, Harry... Oh, I don't even remember what happens. Like, Harry gets tossed a note in class or something, and Snape comes over and, like, slams his book down, and he just goes... 624. And you're like, what the fuck is that?
Mentioning Lucius Malfoy, how in the second movie
he tries to
kill Harry at the end of the movie.
When he tries to curse Harry at the end, he says Avada.
Whoa.
And then Dobby like curses him down the stairs.
That's a little much, perhaps.
Yeah.
You can totally get away with killing a student.
Just in the middle of the hall.
You freed my house up, I will kill you now.
I will kill you.
I'll just pay my way out of it.
Yeah.
No, I don't think murder works like that.
I did like Jason Isaacs, though, just because I like him as an actor.
Right, the cast is pretty great overall. Movies, they got some of the best British actors they could.
The one character in the movies that was perfectly in line with my character in my head was McGonagall. I thought,
yes.
I'm a big fan of Maggie Smith.
Maggie Smith!
She's the
mom. Oh, my butt hurts so bad.
These hard wooden chairs, that's why everyone's standing all of a sudden.
Yep.
Lord almighty.
All right, well, any more thoughts on the movies, or shall we see if we can end this crazy
thing? I'm done. I am done.
Is that the whole outline?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
All right, well.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but I've been drinking for the last hour.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah,
I have
been really jealous of you for the last hour.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
So does anyone have any... plugs or last-minute thoughts in general?
before we tell plugs. People how to contact
the
us.
Weasley Collects plug.
Nice.
Good plug. Good.
Yeah. Who's the ugliest girl at Hogwarts? Winky the house elf. Good one. Obscure. Yeah, I plug a Harry Potter musical to anyone who likes the books.
But not the second one.
No, not the sequel. The first one, though.
And the Potter Puppet Pal.
YouTube it. Potter Puppet Pals is very good also.
So if anyone out there in listener land has, I can't believe I said that. I'm never saying that again. Questions or comments, or just want to tell us that you somehow made it this far.
Oh my dear God.
Assuming I don't just split this into two parts, because I don't know if I can sit there and edit for 3.5 hours.
Seven parts.
So delicious.
Do we have to kill a person every time we do that?
Yep.
Everyone in the round table drops dead one by one. There are seven of us? No, there's six of us. Shit.
Almost.
Shit.
Well, Hippo is
well,
in
Hippo
here.
Well, Hippo is here.
Yeah, so if you wanted, feedback, it is... you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
You can also find us on iTunes, as usual.
Review, etc., if you're going to do that. Holy cow, I hope that is all for this week.
No!
Oh, next... that isn't it, the next damn book!
Shut up, idiot!
God!
Been so angry. We are going to relive Best Seller Month. We're going to do another one this year. So we're starting that next week. We're trying to get as far away from Harry Potter as possible. And we're going to read Dan Brown's Inferno.
Oh, geez.
Number one on the bestseller list.
I'm sure it'll be really, really good.
Yeah. Totally.
There is a possibility next week's episode will involve hate reading.
Yeah. But
a strong possibility, even.
We do it for you.
We
and
do
us.
It for you. That's right. So that's actually it.
Yeah,
right?
That is it.
Oh my God, this has been so long. Well, that's it for this week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.